A simple definition of a tech-up is it's a space where technologists, innovators, and entrepreneurs gather to share ideas and build a product, build a company.
A tech-hub is where technology will be appreciated most and first within community, within business, within industry, and within government. If you go to any country where tech-hubs are, that's the bedrock of how technology comes into our countries. So if you stop seeing the tech hub as just a space young people come with their laptops to write a code, build an app, but you see the tech hub as the midwife of technology to come into this emerging market, then you begin to appreciate and understand the weight of responsibility that the tech hub needs to take to be able to shape the role technology plays for community, for businesses, for industry, for government.
Entrepreneurs continue to cement their position as key drivers of economic and social progress, providing a growing stream of employment opportunities in emerging African economies. This development has given rise to the establishment of tech hubs, spaces where technology enthusiasts, innovators, and entrepreneurs gather to share ideas. Today's podcast looks at the value of African tech hubs. The episode will focus on the role that African tech hubs play in building sustainable businesses, the support they require to ensure their growth, and will also compare Zambian tech hubs against others in the African region. Welcome to Season 2 of the Bongo Hive podcast, brought to you by Bongo Hive in partnership with the International Trade Center's Fast Track Tech Africa Initiative. I'm your host, Maretta Lindunda. This season was recorded during the time of COVID, and in all cases, care was taken to social distance or record the show remotely. Our first guest is Martin Labbé, the Tech Sector Development Coordinator at the UN International Trade Center. The ITC is active in more than 10 sub-Saharan African tech ecosystems, and they recently launched a report on tech hubs in Africa. What are tech hubs, and what purpose do they serve?
A simple definition of a tech hub is it's a space where technologists, innovators, and entrepreneurs gather to share ideas and build a product, build a company. And so here, your typical examples of tech hubs are the co-working space next doors, the accelerator, the incubator, the fab lab. These are the different types of tech hubs. And there's been some research done by AfriLabs and Brighter Bridges last year, and they counted more than 640 tech hubs across the continent. So this is a growing number. Remember, in 2016, there were just 300-something across the continent. So it's really growing fast. And why is that happening? It's because, you know, there's this global digital transformation process happening, and that is feeding the need for support to digital entrepreneurs across the continent, firstly. And secondly, there's also just the basic fact that in Africa, 90% of business is small business. And so here you take a growing share of the small business venturing into the technology space, and then it gives you an idea of why these support institutions are growing, because that's what they are, basically. You know, a tech hub is a business support organization. Other traditional sectors have their chambers of commerce, their industry association, even their trade promotion organization. These are the traditional types of business support organizations. And for us, the tech hubs, they're really just this next generation of business support organizations.
Martin went on to give us a breakdown of tech hub business models, the revenue streams they attract, and also the strategies employed to achieve financial sustainability.
The business model of a tech hub is a little bit of a mix, right? So they opportunistically design their business model on the kind of revenue streams they have been able to generate. And so here you would not be surprised that our research, the tech hub report, has shown that it's 25% of the hubs we surveyed that are funded, where the primary source of revenue is funded programs. So these are programs coming from a bilateral development organization or a UN organization like ours. It can also be private sector. So these are programs that the hubs are implementing on behalf of another organization. Then that's interesting. And I think that's, for instance, where Bongo Hive has been going also recently, right? So it's this consulting programs. This is where you generate revenues by being a consultancy. You provide a service and it's a commercial basis that you are selling the service on. That's 23%. And then we have 13% are generating revenues through grants. So that's not, we're not asking anyone to implement the program. We're just giving money to run operations for a particular hub. And that is a very unsustainable business model, as you can imagine. And then you also generate fees from the co-working space. That is only 11%. So we have a sample of about 40 tech hubs across the continent that we surveyed. So I think our sample is quite representative. And that means that the space business is actually very difficult to monetize. And of course, if you are not the innovation village like CK, who has a lot of space available, I think that revenue stream is very difficult to become substantial. So it's really a volume game. And then it's incubation fees. So here you can generate money by maybe taking equity in a startup and generate funds by supporting its development. So you take a stake in the startup and you hope that at some point you will be able to exit. These are the main types of revenues that we have identified. So you have basically five business models, right? So there is the grantee. This is these are tech hubs that use the grant approach to work with public organizations, foundations, and corporate social responsibility departments of companies to receive grants or granted programs that are fully funded and ready to be executed by them. Then you have the networker. So these are hubs that have the ambition to be ecosystem builders. They offer co-working services to entrepreneurs and access to a network to help them grow. And so here, this is a model that is, as you can imagine, when you see the volume of revenues generated by co-working space rental, for instance, that it's a difficult model to sustain. So it's something that you might want to have as the additional focus area for you, but it shouldn't be your primary kind of objective business model for a hub. Then the consultant. So that one I mentioned, Bongo Hive, your consulting arm, but La Fabrique, for instance, or Siebmann are also good examples here. So the consultant, they have usually several revenue streams. And they offer services such as digital solutions, access to data for governments and development organizations. So collecting data, producing reports. They are also offering turnkey training services. They are also able to offer masterclasses. And they build tools. Yeah? They are able to build tools for clients. And so here, the commercial dimension is really important to distinguish it from a program. And so the consultant is really looking for business. And the challenge here is very often that you don't have the staff inside your organization to deliver these consultancy services, because executing a program, doing program management is one thing. Delivering a consultancy service is another one. And so the big issue here is human resources. But if you have good people and you know you can keep them, it's definitely an area to invest in, because you see that it's generating serious revenues. Then the other business model is the agent business model. So these are usually acceleration-oriented tech hubs. They help startups that are investment ready and connect them with investors. And they generate revenue from exit success fees and fund management fees. That is a very rare model, because it requires the hub to have high-end teams that have this kind of expertise, and it needs to be also be very convincing for the startup to, for instance, let them take equity, to let them do success fee management. And so it's really an area that we see very little examples of. But there's MEST in Ghana, for instance. There is also Flat Six Labs in Egypt that have been good at going into this area, which is very demanding and where we see few startups active. There's the Builder also. The Builder refers to tech hubs that have startup studios as a revenue stream. So they are basically building startups from scratch. They match ideas with founders. Maybe they also develop the platforms, the apps. And so that is also quite a rare occurrence. These are the five business models, really.
What advice would you give to entrepreneurs seeking funding for their startups?
But you know, this whole question about funding is an endless topic. So it, of course, I must confess, I'm, you know, basically on the program management side. So I'm not an entrepreneur myself. And so I shouldn't be talking about this so easily, but I think there's too much of a focus on raising funds for startups before they have even shown that their business model works. Because raising funds on an idea is something that maybe works in Silicon Valley, but it's not something that really works in Africa, where people want to see that your idea is actually a valuable business, a sustainable business. And so the businesses that are able to raise funds, they are businesses that usually, most of the time, show that they generate traction and that they have clients that are willing to pay for what they have to offer. And so that is the starting point. And I think there is this gross misunderstanding on behalf of many of the entrepreneurs that they want to focus on fundraising more than actually having a sustainable business. And unfortunately, the programs like ours, and also, you know, the whole pitching competitions and startup competitions and so on, we encourage a little bit that thinking, whereas the focus should really be on you have to generate your revenues. And then indeed, if you have a tech hub that is able to combine both the skills to make the business stronger, help them pivot when they need to, help them develop a sustainable business model, and also give them access to investment, that would be great.
Given the complexities that come with securing funding for startups, we asked Martin if supporting startups is a financially viable pursuit.
As a tech hub, your mandate is to support entrepreneurs, to support startups. And whether you are at the incubation stage or you are accelerating startups, that's what you are there for. And a tech hub wouldn't be a tech hub if they were not supporting entrepreneurs and startups.
How can African tech hubs ensure their sustainability as well as support the growth of startups across the continent?
So it's not the same rule applying, you know, if you are in Niger, for instance. I think as a tech hub, you will have a different focus than if you are in Cape Town, for instance. And certainly the way you do your job as a hub will be very different. And so it's important that you understand what ecosystem you are in and how you generate your revenues. But clearly, I mean, the sad thing is that most of the hubs we have interviewed are not sustainable. So financially, they're not sustainable. And if these big segments of programs, funded programs and grants stop, then they are at risk, basically. So many of them are at risk. So it's really important to diversify your revenue sources. If you are funded, for instance, by a World Bank program, you have to make sure that there are other programs in your pipeline once the World Bank program stops. And so that's the real challenge. When we look at the sustainability, the Builder model is the one that is most sustainable. But as we've discussed also, it's the one that has the lowest occurrence on the continent.
There are some people in the business world who are of the belief that the most promising businesses do not need the support of tech hubs to function effectively or survive. On the other hand, others see tech hubs as contributing to a culture of innovation and digital entrepreneurship, especially in parts of the continent where the digital infrastructure is not so advanced. What's the truth? What role do tech hubs play in the entrepreneurial ecosystem? Do they have the ability to build sustainable businesses that have real concrete value in improving the quality of life in Africa? We had the privilege of talking to Aziz from Impact Hub Dakar about this. What sets Impact Hub apart from other local tech hubs and those across the globe?
And I think the main difference between us and other hubs is, first of all, we're part of a network of 100 hubs throughout the whole world, which I think is a great plus. It allows us to call onto the experience of entrepreneurs and incubators and co-working spaces from, you know, all across the world, South America, other parts of Africa, Asia, etc. So I think that's already a big plus. And I think more individually, I think what really sets us apart is the fact that we're very willing to innovate. We're very willing to learn. We're a business. Not all hubs are businesses. We're definitely a business. And so, you know, we have the responsibility to try and find new solutions all the time to not only generate money, but generate money by providing support to our customers who are the entrepreneurs. So I think I would say, yeah, our willingness to go into new places is something that also sets us apart from other hubs.
What would you say are the differences between African regional tech hubs, given that Impact Hub operates in various regions in Africa as well as other continents?
The East African ecosystems have benefited from strong government backing. In my opinion, I think the governments have really understood the potential of the digital ecosystem, the potential of the tech of the tech world, and really invested strongly in making sure that the talents within these sectors had solutions and had avenues for growth and success. I would say in South Africa, it's been in the southern region of Africa. Depending on which country you're talking about, South Africa is set apart from other countries, but I think they have specific clusters in South Africa with a strong concentration of a variety of talents. I think in South Africa, they probably have the most well-rounded ecosystems in terms of investors, in part because it's just, you know, these are two Anglophone regions and therefore very attractive to investors, but also in part because I think traditionally they've just been more, and South Africa specifically, I think, has just been more blessed with capital, more blessed with great quality of education, etc. But I think there it's a bit more elitist, and I think they also have a job to do to make sure that it's a bit more democratized, basically, but it also depends on where we're talking about. And West Africa is just, I think it's great in terms of talent, but then there's not much support brought to these talents compared to the southern region of Africa, and even more and more to East Africa. So I think the talent is there, but it probably needs a bit more involvement from the government, a bit more understanding as well, and even from development funders. I think we need to make sure that we find a system that's more authentic in terms of our realities and in terms of, very specific difficulties that we have in this region, like early stage funding, for example, which is a big problem here.
Aziz also spoke to us about the gaps and opportunities that exist for tech hubs in West Africa with regards to provision of support from the government and the development community.
If I'm going to look at West Africa, which is the area I know most, the big difficulty is that the most talented people often do not go into entrepreneurship. I think this is very much a culture in which entrepreneurship is more of a subsistence thing, and most talented people find a well-paid job. So I think the number one thing to do is to make sure that we change that culture. And I think the one way to do that is to equip the most talented people to go into entrepreneurship without it costing them, their lives, basically, without it becoming a risk that's too high. I think, again, there's a big problem with early stage funding in this area of the world. There's not enough. But when an entrepreneur decides to go into entrepreneurship, he doesn't have enough money to basically survive in the first 3 years of operation while the business sort of structures itself and just finds its feet. I think I think these are markets that are very risky, that are very unpredictable, and so they need more time than other types of market that are a bit more predictable. We need more time here to figure out how to design products effectively, how to market products effectively, how to approach clients, etc. And we need to figure out what the abilities of the clients and the customers are as well. It's just less clear, and I think it's the government's role and the funding and the funders' role to bring more clarity to what the market really is, to what the ecosystem has the potential of being, again, in a very authentic thing. I think it's still a region that imports too many solutions, imports too many standpoints, imports too many structural way of doing things. And that's probably where we need to do the most work, is to build our own ways of doing things, our own way of seeing things, and our own solutions.
Speaking about funding for tech hubs in West Africa from the private sector and government, Aziz said,
hubs are funded by funders based on the funders' priorities more so than on their own priorities. I think that's the big problem. I think there needs to be a lot more trust. I would say, if you ask me, I think the big problem with the tech world here is that there's not enough trust. I think the level of risk is very high and very few people are willing to accept it. I think in terms of funding, we need funding that's a lot more closer to venture capitalist funding, but we also need there to be a lot more trust in terms of what the hubs are trying to do, and they need to have a lot more independence. Well, 90% of the time, what's going to happen is a funder is going to have its own ideas, and it's going to have its own program, and it's going to come see a hub for the hub to execute on that idea, on that vision, on that program. We need hubs to come up with more visions, to come up with more of their own programs, and we need the funding to be more aligned with what the hubs are trying to do and what the entrepreneurs need and what the entrepreneurs are trying to do. I would say that that's the main difference here. Funding is too attached to very specific objectives that are not necessarily their own, and very oftentimes the funding that we're able to benefit from is not funding that really gives us a lot of freedom in terms of the investments that we can then go on and make. So we just need funding that's a bit more liberated, it's a bit more free, and that's a bit more trustworthy and risk taking at the same time.
How has COVID-19 impacted the way tech hubs operate?
There are things that can definitely move virtual. Some training sessions can be moved virtually. Some one-on-one sessions between the incubators and the businesses can be moved virtually. But I think it's harder to keep a leash, so to speak, on the entrepreneurs when it's virtual. If an entrepreneur doesn't show up, you don't know where they are. You don't know you don't know what to do. You don't know how to reach them. Although it can also be easier for entrepreneurs, especially in these types of markets, it can also be easier for an entrepreneur to log on to a call than to move physically to go to the office because of the transport costs. So on training sessions and on one-on-one sessions, I think virtual communication has potential. If you're going to, however, invite outsiders, so if you're going to have them talk to mentors or to investors, it's still better to do that physically. If you've been to an investor summit, for example, most of the conversations and most of the business isn't conducted in the main sessions, like in the panel sessions. It's really within the corridors where people can take a coffee, eat something together, get a drink. The ability for people to connect physically and to do stuff physically, I think, is a big thing in terms of networking and in terms of an entrepreneur's ability to sell. I think I like to say that most deals are closed, around the dinner table more so than in offices. So I think it's important for people to still be able to connect physically, notably when they're trying to connect with investors and mentors and things of that nature.
In our quest to gain more understanding of African tech hubs and the role they play in the entrepreneurial ecosystem, we continued our virtual voyage of discovery from Senegal in West Africa to Uganda in the East. There, we caught up with CK from Innovation Village Kampala. Innovation Village is Uganda's launchpad for leading innovators and entrepreneurs. We wanted to gain insight into the tech hub space in Uganda, so we asked him what role Innovation Village plays in the Ugandan tech ecosystem.
Our role has had to evolve over time. I remember when we just opened our doors, I walked into a Google office and I was asked, what's the difference between you and the other hub that we support? I quickly learned that it was a very hard question that I couldn't answer But then I quickly learned that, you know, you can't just build a tech hub in an emerging ecosystem like ours, like East Africa. Unfortunately, you have to go the extra mile of worrying about the other things within the tech ecosystem that just a tech hub would need. So we've seen the role of Innovation Village grow to actually be an ecosystem builder of the tech ecosystem. We can't leave that job to hope. So what that means is we have to work more deliberately with the corporate sector, corporate ventures, trying to help them get into the tech hub ecosystem. You don't have investors in an emerging market like ours. You have to be deliberate on how you're going to onboard investors. So we had to build an angel investment network. We've eventually had to build our own investment fund to get, you know, investment ecosystem going. So it's everything that ecosystem needs to get a tech hub going. So I'd say our role has matured into ecosystem building versus just, you know, a traditional tech hub.
Are tech hubs able to build sustainable businesses that have value and improve the quality of life in the countries which they operate?
From our own story, I can only speak from where we are. I think it's possible, and it's something that has taken us 2.5 years to really figure out. And now we are pathing on forward in the path to sustainability. So I think it is possible.
To ensure that tech hubs become notable change makers within the continent, CK emphasized that the transformation of people's mindsets towards tech hubs would have to take place first.
It has to take a transformation in the mindset a tech hub has. Because if you look at the context of Africa and most economies where we are, a tech hub is where technology will be appreciated most and first within community, within business, within industry, and within government. If you go to any country where tech hubs are, that's the bedrock of how technology comes into our countries. So if you stop seeing the tech hub as just a space young people come with their laptops to write a code, build an app, but you see the tech hub as the midwife of technology to come into this emerging market, then you begin to appreciate and understand the weight of responsibility that the tech hub needs to take to be able to shape the role technology plays for community, for businesses, for industry, for government. And in delivering that role, that's how we hit sustainability. So for example, our tech hub here has been running a project with the leading East African media agency around the future of media. So we see our role as supporting this 100-year organization to be able to unlock its next S-curve or unlock its opportunity for growth as a result of working with our entrepreneurs and our technology. So that cannot be underestimated or understated in terms of what it represents. So in delivering that role, that's how we begin to hit sustainability and do that times different sectors, do that times different industry partners. And it's actually a very novel role that a tech hub can play within an emerging market.
How has COVID-19 impacted tech hubs such as yours and the ones you support?
Yeah, that's a very emotional one and a very real one. And also because we're right still in the middle of, you know, COVID-19. I've spoken to a number of people, and just because lockdown has been eased and people are beginning to get back to business as usual, we tend to forget the fact that, you know, COVID-19 is still here and is still a real case for us and only just beginning to get worse. But that said, we've had entrepreneurs who have shut down, closed their doors. You know, business wasn't going well. They had to stay home, stay safe, wash your hands, respond to the SOPs. And we've had even other businesses, the tech companies that came into Uganda, having to close down. But I think for me, the novelty of entrepreneurship and technology in what we do is, we love to say that that entrepreneurs solve our most pressing challenges using technology. So what better challenge could we begin to solve than COVID-19? So whereas pre-COVID, we had about 500 young people walking to the four hubs we ran across the country. You know, during COVID, all that went down and the lights were shut. Some of them closed. We rose up and, you know, they say never waste a crisis, and challenged our community. So we launched a COVID challenge for the community. And we got over 100 submissions from the community on the different elements or different solutions they had to respond to COVID-19. And, you know, for me, that gave me the encouragement that, you know, entrepreneurs continue to rise, continue to be the hope, continue to be ingenious as far as coming up with ideas. So a good example, we worked with one of our startups to help 4,000 SMEs get online such that they can continue doing business as usual, even right in the midst of COVID-19. So, yes, it was a bad situation, but I am encouraged by how our entrepreneurs and the tech hub also responded. But also very importantly, it had amazing lessons for us, because it challenged what we thought was our path to impact, which path to impact probably depended on people having to come into the hub to interact with our teams and work from the space. But we managed to transit over 80% of our engagements and programming online, such that people can we can continue with business as usual. We built traceability platforms that were also adapted by the government to help identify where COVID is. So it opened up the reach of the tech hub beyond the walls of the tech hub. And I don't think life will ever be the same for tech hubs as a result of COVID-19.
We asked CK to paint us a picture of what comes to mind when he thinks of African tech hubs and the role they play in the ecosystem.
I think, like I said earlier, a tech hub in Africa is really the gateway of how technology gets to our communities, gets to our businesses, gets to government, and gets to our countries. I think tech hub need to reimagine and embrace that role, for them and their countries and economies. It takes a big mindset shift. And, I remember I visited Silicon Valley in December, and I went to these two tech hubs. One runs a typical tech hub model, the ones most hubs in Africa are trying to replicate. And what that is they pick up 20 entrepreneurs every 6 months, incubate them for that period of time. And then this hub has the capacity to invest about 100K in each of the 20 entrepreneurs, incubate them for 6 months. At the end of 6 months, 400 investors turn up, and each of these 20 entrepreneurs guaranteed walks away with anywhere between $1 to $5 million, and they've done this for the last 15 years. Now, if you take a step back and reflect, that in itself has never happened anywhere across Africa in terms of running a tech hub that actually invests in all the entrepreneurs, and then you have investors turn up and all of the entrepreneurs walk away with that initial seed investment. It's just not how our ecosystems are. It's just not how our ecosystems have grown to become or to be. I went further into the valley and I met another tech hub, and they were signing a contract of $1.5 billion with an association of 60 organizations in the US. And these organizations were signing this contract with this tech hub because they were going to source innovation from the tech hub. The tech hub is the one that has entrepreneurs across the country. So these organizations, instead of trying to search for innovation by themselves, they saw the tech hub as the partner to go to seek innovation from, such that the tech hub can do the hard work of understanding what entrepreneurs are building and match the needs of the 60 organizations. So in there, for me, lies the future of a tech hub in Africa. If you as the tech hub are the ones that appreciate, play with, understand technology, then you need to begin changing the mindset of what a tech hub is for your economy. Be the one government, be the one private sector, be the one industry, be the one entrepreneurs come to, such that their ideas can come to life to be able to transform industry, but also to solve our most pressing challenges. Now, that takes a big mindset shift because traditionally, a tech hub is the one where entrepreneurs come with their laptops and then it goes to a big corporate and begs part of CSR budget and begs to be supported. Now, if you're able to flip that in how you design your programs, in the conversations you have, then I think as a tech hub, you will begin to drive the conversation of how we need to drive innovation, entrepreneurship, and technology across the continent.
And there we have it, a resounding crescendo to what has been an amazing explorative entrepreneurship adventure. We covered topics such as bootstrapping your business, business continuity through a pandemic, out-of-the-box approaches to securing markets, digitization, securing corporate partnerships, selling to enterprise, internationalization, green integration and sustainability, the entrepreneurial ecosystem, and finally, the value of African tech hubs. If you're a budding entrepreneur, this is the information you need to help you set a firm foundation for your business. And if your business is already established, what better way to enhance your knowledge, skills, and expand your network than in the company of other entrepreneurs? This has been Season 2 of the Bongo Hive Podcast, brought to you in partnership with the ITC's Fast Track Tech Africa Initiative. Visit www.bongohive.co.zn/podcast to subscribe and listen to more episodes, which are available on all major podcasting platforms.